Good morning. try something just a little bit different today. I've made a photocopy of a very beautiful piece. It's called The Guidepost for the Hall of Pure Bliss. So we're going to read it for the first time together. I assume that it's beautiful. But anyway, we'll work with that. A couple of things have come up. We have someone new sitting with us for the first time, Natalie, and make yourself comfortable. You can move in the course of the talk, so don't worry about that. We just move kind of quietly. But she brought something up. Now, I hope I don't embarrass her. I have a tendency to embarrass people. See? But she said, at one point, she said, that she feels a little panicky. Well, that's not an uncommon feeling. Many of you in here have expressed pretty much the same type of experience. Fearful, panicky, see, terribly anxious. And always, I pretty much respond the same way. See, this is the feeling that's generated from the egocentric self. Anytime there is this sense of that I am under attack, see, the ego immediately swings into a defensive posture. But interestingly enough, its tools are rather limited. See, what can it do? It can get angry. Well, if there isn't anything really to confront it in an aggressive way at that point, you see, anger isn't appropriate. So then what do? Well, we feel panicky. We feel fearful. Now, I was drawn to this practice. I was drawn way before I ever found my Zumi Roshi, a place to practice. But I was a God seeker, if I can put it that way, from the time I was quite small. I was very much attuned to dukkha, see, suffering. And when I looked out at life, I did have this overwhelming sense of something is missing. There was something missing in my life. And so long as I experienced myself in a dualistic way with the environment around me, of course, something is missing. And then, if something at all, so all of a sudden triggers within me the feeling that there's going to be a dramatic change. See, the potential for change is very, very frightening for us. See, that's one of the problems that people have. And the psychologists spend lots of time working with that, see. We're uncomfortable with change. Now, I find that fascinating, see, and it shows you how delusional we can be. I don't want change. See, if somehow a neighborhood goes through some sort of a crisis, and there is change. See, we don't want change. We want things to stay stable and as they are. See, now, isn't that fascinating? Because not for one moment do you ever live in the security of a place where there isn't change? It's constant. It's constant. Your body right now is going through all sorts of changes. The environment is in a constant state of flux. The sirens will be gone. Now, some of you who stayed for the first time last night, you may have heard, you know, what we have here on occasion. Sirens preceded by some gunshots, I guess. See? That's the big city, see? That's the big city. But it's constant change, see? It isn't the same thing. It isn't you think that you go home to the same kind of situation, but you don't. And this is where you can get into trouble. Because in the egocentric mind, you will try to make everything stay fixed, static. When you go home, see, if you have children to go home to, you will not allow for the change, for the growth that is continuously happening with them. See, I often raise Mazen's daughter because those of you who have been here for a long time know that when George was little, while I was talking, she'd be crawling around here in diapers. See, now she's a young lady. See, there was never a moment when she was static, when she was not moving. It was constant movement. See, so it's an impossibility to live in this stable environment that we long for, we yearn for, we think that's what we want. So anything that appears, see, to be a threat to that sense of stability, we react to it. If we react, see, in a relatively benign way, we turn it in, and always we turn it against ourselves. We're a little panicky. Oh my gosh, what's going on? Well, I'm uncomfortable. I don't know what's going on, but I do know that there's something different here. There is a change in the environment. There's a change in what I'm perceiving. So I can react sort of panicky, see, or I can react with great anxiety or fear. I can remember with myself reaching points in the practice where I experienced fear, and I thought, my God, what is this, this fear? See, the truth of the matter is, if we don't deceive ourselves, most of us live with a great deal of fear. And at some point, as you get a little older, see, you'll begin to acknowledge that fear. I think Joshin could sense that as you got older. You know, you can't hide from it. You can't pretend anymore. That at the basic level of the egocentric mind, fear is that basic ground. And see, with that is anger. See, and again, realize that constant changing in your fear and your anger and your anxiety has no more reality, see, than whatever you empower it with. See, if you don't get caught in playing with it, thinking, oh my God, see, if you're a parent, you have children, you see, you'll be worrying about what's going to happen to my children. See, when they first go out and drive by themselves, or they first go out and they don't come home until much beyond whatever the curfew was, the panic that sets in. Parents will know that. And one of the greatest fears that a parent has, see, is something serious, irreversible, could happen to my child. And this can be the greatest anguish. But the truth of the matter is that 99 and 9 tenths of the time, it's a waste of energy. And not only waste of energy, but it becomes toxic to you, and you become controlling, see, and you want to direct the lives, even though you can't. See, no more than your parents could actually direct your life. See, there is this free flow of this most amazing thing called the life force, see, that has, in fact, its own direction. It has its own duration. See, irregardless of what you think and how you want things to be. See, you're banging around continuously in your head with all sorts of expectations, the way you want things to be. And the fact of the matter is, whether you admit it at all, or you're so insensitive that you shut down, but your expectations are never fully met. And if for some reason your expectation is met, oh, if I could only have this new car, see, then everything would be super. Then you get the new car, and lo and behold, you're carrying the same head around. And once you satiate that desire, you're out in the same place. The car will not have made an appreciable change in your lifestyle. Okay. And then in a very short time, it's no longer a new car. So we're thrashing about, see, here to there, searching for this, trying to pick up that, rejecting. We're in a constant process of change, thrashing about even in our dualistic mind. And yet, we're fearful of change. Now, the kind of fear, again, that we're talking about is born out of the gravest of all of the evils, greed, anger, and ignorance. And ignorance here isn't a lack of book learning. Ignorance, again, is to experience yourself as separate from the environment you inhabit. See, when I live in that dualistic world, see, where I see everything as outside of myself and potentially threatening or so desirable that I want to clutch it, I want to cling to it, I want it for my own, and we realize that you can't. See, so there we are, living in this dualistic world where the basic ground is anger and fear. And it's driven behind this egocentric sense of separation. It's like a thin membrane. This is sort of the way I experienced it. It's sort of like a thin membrane. And once you pop through that, see, and to pop through it, it sounds like it's a painful process. It's not. It's painful to this extent that you will clutch, you will cling to your delusional thinking. See, you'll clutch and cling to, I want to understand everything. See, I don't want to have to confront anything that is a challenge, because that could be potentially frightening. But if you can make the transition, lo and behold, rather than finding that you live in a world, see, where anger and fear and anxiety, insecurity, see, reign supreme, you've entered into a new world. And it's right where you sit. The only difference is what you've done with your mind. You have flipped the mind. And you begin to experience your life in a totally different way. The basic ground of the enlightened mind, which is right here with you now, see, is compassion. But it isn't the kind of compassion that you understand. It isn't self-generated compassion. It is not compassion with the agenda of, I can do something for you. See, so long as you're functioning from that position, you're still driven by a massive ego. I can do something for whatever is out here. See, that's completely missing the enlightenment of the Buddha. What did Buddha say when he was enlightened? He said, I, the great earth, and all sentient beings, everything. And this I that he's talking about, see, the I, the great earth and all sentient beings, that's that I, the great earth and all sentient beings, simultaneously attain the way. See, he didn't say, the Shakyamuni has got a leg up on the rest of you, and I'm going to do something for you. He didn't say that at all. See, he said, as a matter of fact, we are all simultaneously, see, enlightened. And in the universe that he inhabited, that was absolutely true. See, that's the amazing, the magical aspect of what we're doing. That you sit alone there, behind your eyes. See, you're in there by yourself. See, only in your delusion do you really think, and how many times have you said to yourself in the past week, I know what they're thinking. No, you don't. You only know what you're thinking. And you react to your own thoughts, your likes, your dislikes, you project it out. See, you perpetuate the delusion. The old masters will say, you make your own heaven and hell. I used to hate that statement. See, but the fact is we do. See? And if you're willing and able, see, to take care of this problem where you are as you are, which means we sit down, we begin, see, to turn the force, the illumination, the light, see, of this enlightened mind. And again, this enlightened mind, this is that state of awareness you're sitting in. You are aware. See, you hear that cough. You hear the sounds. You can feel your body. That's awareness. You are aware. And what are you aware of? Now. You're aware that you're awake right now. You're aware that you're having an experience right now. That awareness. See, instead of being directed out there, see, we turn it in here. See, and then, lo and behold, you start to find yourself sitting here in this kind of an amazing place, see, and all of this is around you, and you sense that you're trapped in this shell, see, of the six senses. See, and that's where you are. You're trapped in what they call the illusory body. See, freed from that, so that I am not, and I hold myself in this space by being trapped in my seeing, my hearing, my smelling, see, tasting, feeling, thinking. See, and that mind that thinks right now, that's behind your eyes thinking, see, that's the picking and choosing mind. If that stops, see, then I sense that I'm just sitting here. And I'm sitting here in this most amazing place, see, and this now is wherever you find yourself if you wake up, if you get quiet. Wherever you stand, that's what you'll experience. Now, see, that's just a beginning that's beginning just to sort of recognize that there's something going on here. There's something quite amazing. Yes, I can get quiet. And if you can't quiet the mind, you won't even be able to follow us this far. See, the mind has to be quiet. Now you simply look out, and you simply listen. And you do not try to understand it. You don't try to conceptualize it. Remember, everybody in here knows what is samadhi. See, don't make something up. Samadhi is simply the state of non-distracted awareness. Awareness that's here, present. Your consciousness is here, present. Now, if you want to play with this to see how deep is this moment, that's the deepening of samadhi. See, until we drop into that pinpoint small place of absolute samadhi, absolute focus. See, kung, call that the great death if you like. See, there is a turning. See, and then it projects out. See, and what is projecting out here? This is the state of awareness. See, this now, it is eternal. Guidepost for the hall of pure bliss. What hall of pure bliss? What is he talking about? Something in the mountains of China? Something down in the beautiful Black Scorpion Temple? No. Where is this hall of pure bliss? Are you quiet? Don't think now, because he'll tell you. See, this is the guidepost. He's going to walk you into this place. But already some of you are seeing it. Now, if you slip back and say, well, no, I'm kind of hanging with you here. I'm in kind of a samadhi. I'm not doing too much thinking, but I don't experience any great bliss. That's because you are still caught in that dualistic mind. And in that dualistic mind, see, that's where Natalie was experiencing the panic. The moment we slip free from that into this, you first begin the sense of some wonder here. Wow, what is this? See, what is this? See, and if we can slip past, see, that craving to put the conceptual mind, the picking and choosing mind into play, let it just settle. It will drop away by itself. It needs movement. And that's what becomes difficult in like this retreat. You'll sit, see, and you'll start to try to focus on your practice. See, but the egocentric mind, the monkey mind, that's why it's called monkey mind, and sometimes wild horse mind, because of the passions, the power of a powerful horse, see, crashing about. Or jump, 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 jump. And those of you who are sitting in the retreat know what it means. But you keep pulling it back. We give you the practice, because this isn't something that you can accomplish through an act of will. Do your practice. See, don't fall into despair. See, don't go into the critical mind saying, I can't do it. You are a Buddha, simply waiting to wake up. And what does that mean? It doesn't mean that you have to grow extra wings or arms or legs. See, it means that you simply stop allowing the egocentric mind to be the master of all that you do. You flip it. See, don't think your discriminating consciousness will be gone. It's simply another tool that you work with. See, it's just a tool you work with. Most of you heard this over and over. Roshi would always say about it, it's a miserable master, but it's a wonderful servant. He says here, by seeking appearances and sounds, one cannot truly find the way. See, if you try to trap it, see, if you want to look for something, or if you want to hear something, or if you're intellectually pursuing something, you really can't do it that way. See, and even in here, some of us, that's what we really try to do. And I would say, without fail, we all do it to varying degrees. See, again, you know, dependent upon our aspiration and our motivation and our expectation, some to greater degrees. We've had people who did made all of the mistakes the old masters talk about, memorizing phrases and passages, and then spewing them out as if they're my understanding. And it's become so obvious, see, when it's not real, when it's not genuine. And the interesting part is you should be asking yourself, if it's real and generous, or genuine, why do you still live in a twisted world of pain and suffering? Why are you so easily turned over so that that ugly ego side comes out, splashing blood all over the place? Is this the way an enlightened being acts? Is this the way an enlightened being functions? And then alone, see, in your deepest moment, ask yourself, see, am I truly, truly content? I think it was the great Hong Zhe said, he said, is your sleep deep and peaceful? He said, if it's not, you still haven't actualized the way. That's a reminder to me that my sleep isn't deep and peaceful all the time. Last night was pretty good, but sometimes it's not. So it shows me to that degree I'm still thrashing about. Do not deceive yourself. He says the deep source of realization comes with constancy, bliss, self, and purity. The deep source of realization, not the superficial, intellectual kinds of understanding. And I think that this kind of an intellectual understanding of Buddhism now has center stage on the practice of Buddha Dharma probably throughout the world. Probably very few places where the real practice, see, of Dharma occurs. And realize, the real practice of Dharma occurs within yourself. You are a Buddha field. Ultimately, the Buddha field. If you can slip free from the egocentric mind. He said, its purity is constant. Its bliss is myself. Purity is constant. What does he mean here? See, we know that the Dharma, purity, see, is the treasure of the Dharma. What is the Dharma? All things are the Dharma. Purity, it simply means as they are. Don't add to it. See, you do not add to it. That means you don't go into the picking and choosing mind. Then if you slip back into the picking and choosing in mind and say to yourself, well, Yogan, how will I know right from wrong? There you are, you're caught. See, in the dualistic mind. This is a place where you can also have a little bit of fear because you think, oh my God, as the Buddha said, I'm going to fall into the void. I'm going to fall into emptiness. Then the great layman Pang said, fall into it, it's good. Yang Wu said, emptiness, fall into it, it's good. See, that's the only place that you can find sanctuary. Because this emptiness does not mean non-existence. Yeah, I don't know which one of the old masters said, I do not teach the doctrine of annihilation and non-existence. Well, what do we mean? Don't try to grasp it. Most important thing, that's what he told you from the first. Don't seek it in appearances and sounds. So this purity is constant. This, as it is constant. See, the bliss, see, is myself. This is the reward body, the actualized state. See, what does it mean to exist, see, in a state of enlightenment? It means that you experience your life in a totally different way. See, quite an amazing thing, quite a remarkable thing. See, where you are as you are, you don't have to, as I said, grow wings. See, you don't have to do anything except flip-flop the delusional mind. Buddha said it. Only difference between an enlightened being and ascension being is upside down thinking. It's that simple. See, it's that simple. He said the two, purity and the bliss, are mutually dependent like firewood and fire. See, mutually dependent, see, on this one great thing, which is this pure, pure state, see, of now, of awareness. And this has great intelligence, great sensitivity. Remember It's what can weep at the sounds of a hurt child, that can swoon intoxicated with the beauty of a sunset. See, that rises up when an injustice appears. See, and it works with all of this in a most amazing way. At no point does it grasp, and at no point does it push away. It simply takes care of what needs to be done. He said, the self's bliss is not exhausted. It is never exhausted. See, I've had people who have touched when you start to deepen your samadhi and you actually begin to feel the practice. And they'll have this wonderful feeling, see, and immediately they'll say, they'll come in and say, well, you know, I just felt awfully damn good up there in yoga, and so I know I was doing something wrong. But no, see, it isn't doing something wrong. See, the whole point to Buddha Dharma is that you should be enjoying, your life should be rich, and it should be fulfilling. See, the very opposite of dukkha, which means unfulfilled, or sometimes suffering. I prefer the definition that Dr. Cook used, unfulfilled. See, and at a certain point, see, if we can turn this, if you can leave this alone, non-doing, stop that, see, then you begin to look out here and accept the purity of it. It is as it is. I've said this over and over, and I use this so that I don't get into any real conflict. A rattlesnake is a rattlesnake. There's nothing evil about a rattlesnake. There's nothing bad about a rattlesnake. There's nothing frightening about a rattlesnake. But you simply recognize the purity of it as it is. Rattlesnakes can bite. Highly toxic. But you have no problem. See, if you discriminate with absolute purity, that's what it is. Kitten comes into the room. A kitten is a whole different creature to work with. See, but neither one of them are good or bad. Both are born out of this most amazing dharma. If you accept one and want to crush the other, you are dualistic and you will cause yourself pain and suffering. He said, constant purity has no end. The self's bliss is not exhausted. The constant purity has no end. See, do you hear what he's telling you? This bliss, which is you. See, why do we use the word bliss or these old masters? Because you're freed from fear. Do you know what an amazing state? Can you even imaginate using, see, our discriminating consciousness? What must it be like to walk down the street, encounter any situation, and you're free from fear? They call this that unfettered mind. Free from fear. What an amazing, can you imagine living like that? See, and the fascinating part, that's what your true self is. That's your basic nature. That's your face before your parents were born. See, that fearless nature. And it is pure compassion. See, it can't be anything other than that. Because if you find something in the mandala that spins around you to reject, see, I want no part of this, you're fragmenting yourself. See, you're rejecting part of yourself. You're in conflict. If you're in conflict, you're in a dualistic state. You're in a state then where fear arises, anxiety arises, sickness arises. See, and a fragmented personality, I've said it over and over again, is what? Schizophrenic. Hence, samsara. See, and watch, we feed on ourselves. He said, deep existence is beyond forms. So again here, don't get caught in this. See, this is in constant change, constantly changing. It is the deep meaning goes way, way beyond the form. See, again, using the metaphor of the ocean, the great ocean. See, something comes up. This Buddha mind that we're talking about, something arises. On the great ocean, a wave comes up. And where does the wave come from? Cause and effect. Conditions produce the wave. You, where you are as you are. See, conditions have produced you. And in you, see, and it's not just in you, it's a poor way to say, but what you are. See, you are this life force. You are this most amazing, see, this most amazing creation, see, that rises up. And again, remember, the scientists are telling you the same thing. There has been no break in that life force that rises up out of this Buddha mind, out of this quantum world, if you want. Unbroken from the beginning of time. The geneticist will tell you that. If that life force was ever broken, if it ever died out, you wouldn't be here. You can trace it back. Do you see the wonder of it? And most importantly, if you start to trace it back, we are an old hippie thing that I there. See, we are the children of the universe. Don't know if you remember this song, and then they had the posters. Well, think about something. See, to follow this life force, see, the geneticist talked about. Think back. You have four grandparents. It's a given. You have four grandparents. See, then you give each of them theirs. And you see how this life force that comes to this point, which is you, and then go back another generation and count. I didn't do the math. I should have, but we have a genius, a savant in here or something. Throw these numbers at me, see? Go back five or six and count them out, spreading them out. Go back 1,000 years. See? What is it? It's the ocean. And it's the force of the ocean that comes together, unbroken, and rises up in a wave. And that's what you are. I mean, this should be stunning. Should stunning. Those of you who saw the tape on the neuroanatomist, the lady, I think Jill Bolt, see? When she's breaking down, going into what now for her is death, see? What did she say? My God, I'm not dead. I am the life force of the universe. What an amazing thing. Why doesn't everybody experience it the way that she did? For one thing, she didn't panic. And this again, she used the word nirvana. I don't know where she's been and what she's been doing, but I'll bet you my teacher would have said where she's been in the past. If we can even call it the past, you really can't, because there is no direction in this, see, in that sense of a linear movement. But no panic. And I think there's no mistake. I think these things start as the need arises. We're in terrible, terrible trouble. See, the universe, the world is in trouble. Our mother, the earth, is in trouble. We have become so insensitive, so only involved in our own greed, see, that we slaughter each other. See, how schizophrenic is that? And this Mother Earth that's living, Noman was saying the other day, the scientists now have finally heard, see, the beat of it, the heart of it, the sound of it. It hums. We got a little lady in the back who that was one of the always there. Deep samadhi. Hears the sound of the earth. I used to think she was listening to the insects in Mountain Center. She, can you hear it? Can you hear it? And finally, stupid, thick-headed me, finally punched through, and I was shocked. And it isn't like you hear it with the ears. It's like you hear it with your whole body. It's amazing. Doman said, now the scientists have somehow or another, with their technology, tapped into the reality of this. It's all one living, most amazing thing. And that's what you are. See, this woman, she didn't panic. And that probably means years and lifetimes of practice. She simply observed the changes that took place. If you don't panic, see, and that's what, at the time of death, when the light falls from your eyes, what did the great Mumon say? He said, if you haven't taken care of it, you panic. What did he describe? Like a crab with all eight legs churning, thrown into boiling water. Then he says, it's too late then for you. So don't blame me, I tried to warn you. See, but if you don't panic, you don't twist yourself, see, into the nightmare world again. So you begin to wake up as what? The most amazing thing, see, the life force, the creation. Roshi would say, you are the creation itself unfolding. See, some of you sit here and utter, it's like I want to take a club and crack you on the head. Wake up! A most amazing thing that the scientists can't get and they won't deal with. What is this thing that knows that it knows? Wisdom illuminates the inside of the circle. What circle? Shh, shh, get quiet. Now, like in Aikido, just draw the circle. You're the center of the circle. And he said, wisdom illuminates the inside of the circle. Inside the circle, the self vanishes. Neither existent nor non-existent. Intellect cannot reach that place. It is there. It is you. There is release and freedom, no longer subjected to fear and anxiety, or the confidence and the great compassion. See, when that self, see, ceases to exist, and yet it's not non-existent. You cannot conceptualize, you cannot intellectualize this state that he's talking about. By the way, this is the great Hong Zhe, if any of you are interested in this, it's in the back of his book. He has several things in there. What a magnificent, and realize, not only was he a spiritual genius, he was an intellectual genius, and he knows exactly what the words that he uses means. He said, intimately conveying spiritual energy, it subtly turns the mysterious pivot. When the mysterious pivot finds the opportunity to turn, the original light auspiciously appears. See, now he's talking about the deep samadhi. And when it turns, auspiciously, see, when it turns, see? He said, when the mind's conditioning has not yet sprouted, how can words and images be distinguished? Who is it that can distinguish them? He says, clearly understand and know by yourself. But this understand is not the kind of understanding that we use to gain knowledge of books. See, it is not that kind of understanding. This is the understanding, and this is again, sounds like clever Zen word. No, the understanding of no understanding. See, and the six patriarchs said, yes, there will be understanding. You simply won't be able to express it in words. It's like Dogen says, you will scoop the water up yourself and you'll drink it. And then and only then will you know for sure whether the water is warm or it's cold. And your knowledge will be unshakable. If it's gained by intellectual means, you will never know with 100% certainty. And you'll always wobble. You'll blow whichever way the wind is blowing. When it blows in a negative way, you'll be trapped in fear and trembling. See, when it blows in a positive way, you'll leap to the heights, see, just waiting to crash down again. Whole and inclusive with inherent insight, it is not concerned with discriminating thought. Whole and inclusive. There is nothing excluded. Don't feel that you have to push something out or that you have to, it's whole and inclusive. It's where I got upset with some of the stuff that went in Mexico. Exclusive. You can't practice. You don't have what it takes. Whoo! There is virtually no understanding of Buddha Dharma. It is whole. It is inclusive. That's what this genius tells us. It is not concerned with discriminating thought. I simply work with what's in front of me. See, the point is to get to the place, see, where the discriminating mind no longer controls me. We do that by the practice of Zazen. We cultivate our samadhi, joriki, the strength grows to hold our mind focused on our practice. And all of you already, we're just a day into this, already you know how difficult it is. See, but hold it constant. Have great faith. He said, when discriminating thought is not involved, it is like white reed flowers shining in the snow. What that means is there just is this most amazing oneness. See, the world of oneness. And in the world of oneness, this is your home. This is the hall of pure bliss. This is the place where you're secure. It's amazing, isn't it? See, it's always been here with you. People who punch through. See, for the first time, what do they always say? Oh, I'm okay. I'm okay. It's okay. And it is. See, it is. It's joyful. But remember, you have to continue to cultivate until we finally completely snip the last roots that hold us and pull us and tug us, see, into this great space of liberation. One beam of light's gleam permeates the vastness. The gleam permeates through all directions from the beginning, not covered or concealed. What is he talking? He's talking about this state here of awareness. This awareness, it illuminates all places. There is no place that it can't shine and doesn't shine. See, according to the conditions. It says, catching the opportunity to emerge amid transformation, it flourishes. See, I'll constantly hear this awake mind. Don't go back into this mind that lives in the dark, that lives in the little room where the windows are all clouded over. See, your likes, your dislikes, your fears, your anger, see. See, open it up. See, in this most amazing place, see, let the fresh sun and fresh air blow through. What did Yang Wu say? Empty out the room. See, empty the room out. And then you begin to experience something quite wonderful. Following appropriately amid the transformation, the pure bliss is unchanged. Following appropriate to what? The transformation. As this changes, constant change here, this pure bliss, this undivided, non-distracted state of pure awareness is always appropriate to the moment. It discriminates with absolute precision. See? Perfect in the way that it functions. See? Not knowing, the great Fayan said, this place of not knowing means to know everything perfectly. The sky encompasses it, the ocean seals it, every moment without deficiency. Every moment. Do you want to live in poverty? Then go back into your egocentric mind. But do it the simple way, and there is no deficiency in your life. Where you stand as you are, that's what this cry is. It's okay. We're all right. And that's what you experience. That it's, and it's an amazing sense of relief and release. Wow. I've had people in there, they'll actually start to flap their arms and say, well, I can move. I can move. Of course, you've always been able to move. See, but you kept yourself strapped in the constraints of the dualistic mind. See, not trusting, as the great Banky says, this unborn mind. Live in the unborn mind, and it is easy. It is blissful. All dharmas transcend their limits. All gates are wide open. Through the open gates are the byways of playful wandering. He's telling you now how to live. playful wandering. What has the great Dogen Zenji said? You frolic in a samadhi of, you frolic in the fields of samadhi forever. See, what an amazing thing. See, your life is supposed to be, now don't make the mistake of thinking in the new agey way that there aren't bumps in the road. My teacher always would say, Dogen, there's always trouble, but it's just not a problem. You play, see, and you can transform, see. And when healing is needed, that's what you do. When something needs a smack, you can give it a smack. But you do it, see, from this place of uncontrived compassion. And that's what you are. And if you're not experiencing your life in this enhanced way, it's your fault. You're keeping yourself trapped. These masters have told us there are no limitations. We place these limitations on ourselves. We keep ourselves trapped. And when you go back to your sitting, watch yourself. You count your breath a couple of times and it's too difficult, let me have a fantasy. Pick up your corn, can't make that, let me have a fantasy. That way, you're continuing to reinforce the egocentric mind. You're keeping yourself trapped in the pain and the suffering. All dharmas transcend their limits. All gates are wide open. Dropping off senses and sense object is like the flowers of our gazing and listening falling away. Gazing and listening are only distant conditions of thousands of hands and eyes. See, trapped in the senses. No, it drops away. See, how do you do that? See, here, quiet, still, then this is where you enter. See, this is where you enter. See, and that's why we apply. There is, in fact, the technique that we can use. This is the raft that the Buddha Dharma gave us. See, a template, see, that we can trust, that will allow us, that aids us in crossing, see, the river of samsara, the flow of the egocentric mind, the dualistic thinking, the conditioned mind. See, if you trust in it, and remember, you're not asked to trust in me, you're asked to trust in yourself. A Buddha simply said that you are something so unique. The great Hongzhi said the same thing. He said the others die from being too busy. But I maintain continuity. In the wonder of continuity are no traces of subtle identification. Within purity is bliss. Within silence is illumination. See? See? And again, don't compare one thing to another. Understand that it is whole and it is complete where you stand. Simply release, as the great Yan Wu, relax, release, hold nothing, see, in the discriminating consciousness. He said, the house of silent illumination is the hall of pure bliss. Where is the house of silent illumination? And don't slip into the knowing mind. And you can immediately begin to feel, see, how the river carries you. See, you don't try to push the river. Dwelling in peace and forgetting hardship, let go of adornments and become genuine. The motto for becoming genuine, nothing is gained by speaking. The goodness of Vimalakirti enters the gate of non-duality.